Welcome everybody to Fighters and Riders. I'm Alvin Carter. You're here with Ryan McDermott and Rich Hansen. Tonight we are going to talk about, yes, oh yes, UFC 117, Silva versus Sonnen. This was definitely one of the best cards I've seen in quite some time. Reports earlier are saying there was possibly a million buy rate for this, and the gate wasn't that bad as well, with over 1.5 million. But that's just what we're hearing now. And, of course, there are replays to be calculated. So that's what we're pretty much focusing on tonight. And first, I'm going to go to Rich. What do you have to say about this pay-per-view?
Well, as great as the pay-per-view, it was a great pay-per-view, even if the main event didn't happen. If Anderson Silva would have tripped on his way to the ring or to the cage, broken his jaw, it was a great event. But then to cap it off with the essence of sports, the come-from-behind victory that he pulled out of nowhere, that he was unable to show anything for 23 minutes, and to pull that out in the manner that he did, it was one of the most compelling moments in sport that I think anyone's ever going to see. And it's just a shame that this sport isn't seen by enough people to really put this up there with the great moments of all time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that was beyond ESPN worthy, and it's a fight to be talked about for the ages. Ryan, what do you have to say about UFC 117?
Well, where I'm going to start is with the pure awesomeness of Clay Guida. The Carpenter once again puts on an absolutely amazing show, showing his continued progress down at Greg Jackson's in Albuquerque. In addition, I definitely want to touch on the unprofessionalism shown again for the third time from someone who I'm a big fan of, is Thiago Alves, and giving up 20% of his purse for a mere half pound. At this stage in the game and for the level that guy is at, it's an insult to the UFC, an insult to his fans, and an insult to the sport to not be coming in on weight.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing that up, because I have questions about that as well. And then my thing I really wanted to talk about tonight is also Junior Dos Santos, who clearly should be the next in line for a title shot, but how it was great that Roy Nelson got in there and, you know, was willing to go for it, but how there's definitely a clear level of who's who in the heavyweight division and who's definitely contender. Because when you look at what's going on, it's okay, there's folks who can beat other people in the top 10, but are they ready for the very top tier? Are they ready for Velasquez or even, well, especially Brock Lesnar? But we'll get back to that. But first, let's get on Rich's point here about how this is a great card before you get to this Cinderella story main event. What were some of the bouts you thought that really solidified this as a wonderful card?
Well, all of it. There was not one moment of that card that I didn't completely enjoy. I'm the biggest John Fitch critic that I know or that I see. I fall asleep watching his fights, and I don't know if it was me changing or if he did something different or if it was how great of a card it was going into the Fitch fight, but I even enjoyed every second of that fight. I mean, every fight had something special in it. In the opening event, you had Junior Dos Santos being tested for the first time in his career and coming out smelling like daisies. You had Clay Guida, which we'll talk about more when we cover Ryan's topic, showing exactly what he is and not really, but sort of getting someone to tap the strikes, and who'd ever thought you'd say that about Clay Guida. you had a fantastic catch wrestling submission by Matt Hughes, tapping out a Gracie with it was a technical submission, but submitting a Gracie with a move that was not even jiu-jitsu, but wrestling, there's not one positive thing that Ricardo Almeida can take out of the last 4 months of his life, because he lost to Hughes at Hughes' own game. And then, like I said, the Fitch fight, I mean, was what it was, but for some reason it entertained me. And then that main event, my God. Everyone knew that if Sonnen was going to win, that was how he was going to do it, and he had to be perfect for 25 minutes. He was perfect for 24 minutes and 50 seconds. He made a mistake with 20 seconds left, and he lost. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was a perfect night for the UFC.
Definitely was. And it's funny what you said about John Fitch. I actually found myself enjoying that fight. Part of the reason I enjoyed it, which will lead into Ryan's discussion here, is how Thiago Alves just looked like he was gone. It looks like, you know, I mean, not to say he wasn't decent, but he just wasn't completely there. And some folks are speculating that, you know, he had cut so much that that other half a pound was just not going to happen. But from someone who's had to cut weight before, Ryan, really, what's a half a pound to someone who's already kind of lost everything when, you, of course, you get to rehydrate right after you weigh in?
Well, I mean, for a guy who has had problem with it before, and he, from someone who admittedly comes down from so high, that half a pound could have really been detrimental to him. But I was to know that it was a half a pound, and to give up 20% of your purse when you've, you know, battled your way to be earning that much money to begin with is huge. But I mean, I think it's telling in the reports that have come out. I believe it was either tonight or yesterday that he's hiring Mike Dolce as a strength and conditioning and dietitian for him, who works with Rampage, you know, the tough alum, to come in and actually live in his house for the 8 weeks leading up to his fight from now on. For him to be admitting at this point that he has a problem either sticking to whatever diet plan that he had before or, you know, following through on some kind of, you know, weight routine leading up to these fights, I mean, that's a big deal. It's a big admonition, but it's definitely something that he should have done a long time ago. But to touch on what you're saying about John Fitch, I definitely agree with you, Rich. I think his fights are a complete snoozer most of the time. I would disagree with you, Alvin. I was not impressed by that fight at all, and I think I would go as far as to throw him in the same boat as Shinya Aoki, where, you know, the same guy fighting the same way over and over and over again, and, you know, you put him against GSP, who, you know, continues to evolve, and John Fitch is showing nothing new. The guy's going to get smoked again.
Yeah. I didn't say I was impressed, but it was a decent fight. Actually, overall, it was exciting. That's what I guess everyone's a bit bewildered by. That was an exciting fight. Now, granted, I will say this. After the Clay Guida fight, for some reason, I thought it was time for the main event. And then when this came up, I did say, oh, Lord, that's right. Forgot about this one. How could I after all the weigh-in issues? But it didn't put me to sleep at all. And to your point about Clay Guida and him showing who he is, and I was really thinking that, you know, Clay Guida, I definitely am a fan of this guy. Some people, you know, they'll say, well, until recently, until about, I guess, what, March, you know, he lost to Diego Sanchez, he lost to Kenny Florian. But, you know, he's had his share of pretty good wins, and he lost to Diego Sanchez and Kenny Florian. It wasn't like he lost to somebody showing up for their first UFC fight night. But I think this is definitely putting him on the track. You know, he's a recent winner of a submission of a night. And this submission, which was an injury, it was still pretty surprising. But I think Clay Guida's got a lot to show. And, you know, it's not just he's the fan favorite guy. You know, he's not a Keith Jardine at this point. And if he can string together another win or two, I think he's really, really in the picture. What do you guys think about that? Let's see, Rich.
Well, I think Clay Guida is John Fitch, minus 4 inches, plus a foot of hair, and with ADD. I don't see how anyone can crap on, and I'm not saying any of us are, but how anyone can crap on John Fitch and then profess undying love for Clay Guida. They're the same fighter. They can't strike. Their game is energy, they don't fatigue, and they take down. But because Guida does it in such a bizarre or unique, to find a more neutral word, style, he is beloved, whereas Fitch, who, again, I'm no big fan of, is derided. John Fitch is 13-1 in the UFC, and his only loss was the toughest defense of George St. Pierre's career. If John Fitch doesn't get the next title fight, then what are we doing? He's clearly the second-best welterweight in the world, and he's paid his dues. He's won 5 fights, including big names like Thiago Alves, yeah, big, and Paulo Thiago, amongst others, since he lost. I mean, he's got to be next in line. And can he win? No, but he's the second-best welterweight on the face of the earth, and there's no one better at what he does than him, except for the champion. He has to be next.
I would agree with that point in itself in terms of vying for the next title shot, but I would disagree in comparing him to Clay Guida. I think, whereas I see the comparison that you're making, I think Clay Guida has much more room for improvement and a much higher ceiling. I don't think that Fitch is really has the ability or even the room to grow as he would need to be able to put up a decent showing against, you know, a GSP and to be able to compete like that. But and I think it was good of Guida to realize that he was becoming a gatekeeper, and he went out and is now doing something about it. I don't think that's something you're going to see from Fitch, given the camp that he's coming from with all the quote-unquote studs over there. That's opinion of mine for another time, I guess. I think his fights are much more interesting. This one in particular, he showed, you know, what he's been learning in the stand-up, and whether it was the slam or the right hand of the jaw, of how he broke that jaw, you know, so whatever it may be. But he's evolving, and I think the next time you're going to see him, he's going to be even better than this 117 fight.
The Clay Guida that we saw lose to Roger Huerta is the same Clay Guida that lost to Diego Sanchez, is the same Clay Guida that defeated Rafael Dos Anjos. I haven't seen the evolution in the game that you're seeing, and you're seeing details that I can't, you know, being that you do fight. I'm seeing the same guy who throws punches 2 inches in front of his opponent's face more often than not, just like Frankie Edgar did against BJ Penn, but we'll talk about that another time. I'm seeing the same guy who does the exact same things on the ground that he always has done, and I'm seeing the same beloved gatekeeper who doesn't have a huge notch on his victory, and every chance that he's had on paper, the fights that he loses, the fighters that he loses to are fighters that are better than him, and the fighters that he defeats are fighters that he's better than. That is the definition of a gatekeeper.
Yes, but I think right now, though, what might be, I'm not going to put words in Ryan's mouth, but what I'm saying is this might be a chance for us to see where Clay Guida's ceiling is and what he can do. Because, yes, I do see there are, you know, his game plan doesn't really change, but I do think that he's finding a way to be relatively effective. And if he can step it up, if this new camp can really help him move, you know, see where he needs to go next, work on, you know, finishing and impressive. Being impressive is really all Clay Guida needs, because I guarantee you, if Clay Guida gets a good knockout punch, people will be singing his praises like there was never a trip up, like there was never a Roger Huerta, there was never a Kenny Florian.
Yeah, if my aunt had a penis, she'd be my uncle.
Well, you also got to remember, like, this Rich, you're right. The things that I'm seeing are definitely smaller improvements by him, particularly in the stand-up. And his ground game probably isn't going to, you know, improve by leaps and bounds because, you know, he's a wrestler, and that's probably what he's going to fall back on from time to time. But this is only his second fight in a brand-new camp and arguably one of the best camps in the world. So this guy has room to improve, and the guys that he's surrounding himself with right now, he will improve. And I think by a substantial rate next time you see him in the ring.
Exactly.
Okay, there's no
camp that can give your aunt the penis, but there is a camp that can give Guida the power of some more tools, and that's
absolutely
really what it comes down to.
Let's say Kenny Florian beats Gray Maynard, and they put Gray Maynard in against who is on the fringe of a title shot against Clay Guida. Can anybody see any path to victory against Gray Maynard for Clay Guida? I can't.
I can't only because of size. I think they're nearly identical. I think come time that fight, their stand-up would be virtually the same, but I think Gray's bigger and he'd have stronger wrestling base, and I think that would definitely be an edge in that fight.
Yeah,
right.
Gray Maynard, he's a welterweight
is
who happens to not be that heavy. It's pretty ridiculous.
Right.
But I think what we'll see from Clay Guida is the attempt not to be the gatekeeper. And can we say it's going to work? But not, you know, who knows? But he is with, as you know, Ryan said, arguably the best camp out there. And the fact that he's willing to go there, when we had our last conversation about people like Shinya Aoki, he so far hasn't seemed willing to go pick up the tools he needed. If you got someone who's going to get them, you got to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that they might be able to actually acquire the skills they're searching for. You know, if it's a wash, it's a wash. But as for now, I say let's watch him a little closer. I think he might be able to produce, and I already said it. You know, he's one. I got my hands behind me, right, knocked you out from being someone that is really talked about in a more serious fashion than the kids love him. He sells lots of Silver Star T-shirts.
Right. I hope so, because he's a guy that I really like and really enjoy. I'm just more skeptical than either of you, and I hope you're both right and that I'm wrong.
Wow, I don't think that's ever happened on the history of anything Rich has done with MMA. So everyone, you were there for that. Remember this.
Write it down.
Today was, we won't give you the date because you might listen to this at a different date. But anyways, so now I want to ask you guys, I'm going to go to Ryan with this one. Roy Nelson, where do you see his ceiling in the heavyweight division? Because, you know, I was dying of laughter, and Rich and I had a little Facebook thing about this when Joe Rogan says punching Roy Nelson in the gut is like punching a guy wearing 20 sweaters. You know, there's definitely a conditioning situation. Till this point, it hasn't been, you know, that big of a deal. But Junior Dos Santos is a different animal, just completely different animal. Where do you see Roy Nelson going after you? I mean, I do think there are people within, you know, the heavyweight top 10 UFC that he could beat. But, like, you know, say he got a match with Shane Carwin. Like, you know, where do you see him capping off as far as possibly winning?
If that were to happen next week, Shane Carwin would absolutely smash him. What I think the fat slob that is Roy Nelson needs to do is lose the freaking gut and at least make an effort to look like an athlete. Granted, he's got talent. He's a black belt. But there's no way he's going to compete with the top guys in that division. I mean, even one of the young guns, like Cain Velasquez, is going to come in there and just run circles around him. Granted, some of those body punches that he was taking didn't look like, you know, it landed any effect to him whatsoever. But, I mean, it's embarrassing to watch that on TV. And a guy who calls himself a professional athlete, I mean, he could look like, you know, the bum on the corner to anybody else. I think he needs to make an effort to change the way he's doing things. I think he's been around a long time, and he's been surviving on the talent that he has. But it's, I don't know, personally speaking, I know it's harsh, but I think he's just a fat slob surviving on the talent that he has.
Gotcha. Rich?
Well, to answer the specific question, he's in the group with Gabe Gonzaga and Chuck Congo, Ben Rothwell. He's maybe at the top of that group, but that's where he is. And there's hearsay going around about who his next opponent is going to be, and UFC generally putting guys who lose a fight against another guy who loses a fight, and people are saying, well, it'll probably be Carwin then. Well, if Dana White likes and respects Roy Nelson as much as he says he does now, that fight ain't going to happen, because that would just be cruel and unusual punishment. However, if it's all been an act and he still thinks the same way about Roy Nelson that he did during The Ultimate Fighter, then, yeah, that's the fight we're going to see. Assuming you can take Dana White at face value, the fight that we're going to see, if I were booking it, would be the loser of the main event of 119, which is Nogueira versus Mir. The grappling between Nelson and Nogueira would be off the chart, and he can take Nogueira's punches. If he can take Dos Santos' punches, he can take Nogueira's punches. And if it's Mir, if Mir gets upset by Nogueira, and it's Nelson versus Mir, there's a backstory there between their submission grappling competition in 2003. So either of those fights, they Nogueira and Mir are the level right above Nelson. Gonzaga, Congo, Rothwell is the level right below Nelson.
I see. I feel like that's a very accurate setup for where he is. And I do think, to be honest with you, I 100% want to see the Nelson Nogueira fight just because of the grappling. That's where it goes. And, you know, it's not going to be a quick finish on the feet. I do think with Mir, I mean, Roy Nelson's got a chin, and he's pretty sturdy, he's pretty quick, decent boxing. But, you know, Mir can put you out, not that he's been all that successful as of late. The last person he really did dirty was Chuck Congo, but we are finding out that that's not that hard to do. Did anyone think that Roy Nelson was going to be finished at any point in that fight on the feet?
Yes. No.
No, Ryan, you're saying no?
Yeah, no, I said yes. I mean, I think he could have been. I think when he backed him up, when he got backed up to the cage a few times, I think Dos Santos came in a little too close instead of keeping him. You know, I mean, he came in with a couple of really nice combinations, and then he got too close for us to lead him into a nice heavy finishing punch to kind of set him up. But the opportunity was definitely there, and I thought Dos Santos might have been a little bit smarter, but I think he might have seen blood and kind of gone for it a couple times, which is why his output rate kind of dropped significantly round to round. But I was surprised he didn't get put away.
Rich?
Once he survived, to modify my emphatic no, once he survived 2 minutes, Junior's punches were hitting less dramatically, to use Lesnar's word, than they were before. And Junior slowed down, and he started going with body shots and jabs as opposed to just going for the early kill. And once Junior slowed down, there was no way he was finishing Roy Nelson because his punches weren't hitting nearly as hard as they were before. But the fact that he went to Nelson's body shows that he's not just going for the headshot and the kill. He's willing to go 15 or maybe even 25 minutes in his next fight, and it shows a diversity in stand-up striking that you don't see, because you don't see a whole lot of punching to the body and to the midsection like you do in boxing, where you see it all the time. You see everyone going in for the quick kill because they're using 4-ounce gloves. So it'll be very interesting to see if he fights Cain Velasquez, whether the body shots that helped deteriorate Roy Nelson will have the same impact on Cain Velasquez, or if he goes to the body against Brock Lesnar, whether Lesnar will even feel them.
See, I would tend to disagree with you again. I think the only reason he was getting the opportunity for those body shots is because Roy Nelson was flat on his feet with his back against the cage and couldn't move. And I think Dos Santos is young enough where when he went in for the kill a couple times, he got a little frustrated and he had to start thinking new ways he could land punches to do some damage. And I think there were a couple instances in the second round specifically where, you know, he came up from a combination and he looked like, what the hell else do I have to do here to get this guy done?
Which is why I didn't think the fight was going to be finished with strikes, because Nelson's a tough son of a bitch. And I mean, he was leaving he had such a high guard. He was that his elbows were wide apart, like Joe Rogan pointed out during the show. So the uppercut, which is, you know, Junior's best weapon, was able to get through, and he still wasn't putting Nelson on his ass after the first couple of minutes, because it's not derisive towards Junior Dos Santos to say that he couldn't finish Roy Nelson. It's a compliment to Roy Nelson to say that Junior Dos Santos couldn't finish him.
Yeah, and definitely. And that uppercut, when I felt comfortable was when, not that I was rooting any which way, but when I felt comfortable that Roy Nelson was in it for the long haul. After the third uppercut, Roy Nelson looked like, all right, now I'm awake and I'm ready to get my Burger King. That's when I was like, this is going to go. I thought it was going to go a little differently, whereas seeing how, you know, since Junior is with the Nogueiras, I thought, is there a chance he's going to really go for a sub at some point? But it just didn't take that form. And I guess he figured Roy Nelson is still Roy Nelson on the ground, and he's probably a lot more comfortable there. There was a shot or two, which was surprising when Junior went in, I think, in the second round, and even Joe Rogan pointed it out. But to carry off of Nelson in an odd way here, when he beat Stefan Struve, he called the kid a stud. And I definitely think after the 117 performance, Stefan, you know, he showed what he could do. It was pretty dramatic. I mean, you know, have your lip busted like that. And did you guys hear what the doctor said? You know, because Christian Moorcraft was handling him. And the doctor said, do you have a good surgeon? And he said, yeah. So you'll be all right then. And then they let him go right back in for round two and then got that dramatic. I mean, I think he was out when, you know, after that first punch, and then the rest on the ground were just so the ref would, you know, make sure the ref sees it. But what did you guys think about that belt? I'm going to go to Ryan.
It was certainly a dramatic comeback, and definitely not one I expected. I pretty much assumed at one point that he was done with, but I guess I was doing too much of that during 117. I'm glad he's got a good surgeon, because that was one gnarly looking lip, man.
Yeah.
He took a hell of a lot of punishment, and I think the way that he ended it wasn't so intelligent, given the way that he'd been beaten up, you know, to that point. But you know, props to him for pulling it out. You know, can't fault the guy for, you know, laying it on the line.
Yeah, that's for sure. Rich,
here's what I saw. I think that Stefan Struve was 100% convinced that the fight was going to end, and I'm talking for weeks, you know, from when the fight was announced, that the fight was going to end with him on his back getting a triangle. And he was content to stay on his back and take the shots, because eventually Moorcraft was going to get too close and leave something hanging out there, triangle or triangle armbar, fight's over. And in his, you know, if my theory is correct, in his complete and total belief in self, he was willing to take a 10-8 ass beating. And then if the second round came, he got absolutely no coaching, because the entire minute plus extra time was spent with a doctor tending to his lip. And my theory, and again, could be wrong, I'm not the fighter here, was that he went out and said, bloody hell, if I'm on my back again, this fight's over. And he just went out winging and trading punches, because he knew he had 2 minutes of life left in him, and damned if he wasn't able to pull it out that way. He's an absolute enigma, because he's 5 fights into his career and only, what, 22, 23 years old. And I don't think anybody really knows who he is, what he is, or what level he's at yet. So he's very intriguing. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. And
that's,
you know,
interesting
to see how he progresses.
That's an interesting point, and especially the point about the fight. Because the thing that always gets me, you know, and what I'm going to say, you know, I can already hear, well, what is a 6'11 fighter? But he doesn't fight like a guy who's 6'11. He really doesn't. He doesn't seem to be able to control. He doesn't use his distance as well as he could. I mean, when you got a wingspan on him, you know, the jab should be a tool at that point. It shouldn't really be, well, you know, I throw it when I need to. He just doesn't seem like who I think he should be. I'm looking at other tall fighters. Now, true, he doesn't have the weight, but when Tim Sylvia was a half a shade of good, he fought like a bigger guy. Some people say, when's that bout? We can have a separate show about when Tim Sylvia was good. It probably wouldn't be
half
that long.
Half a shade of good?
I think Tim Sylvia was a. I'll put it like this. I think Tim Sylvia was really good for a time period, but I don't find him as one of those timeless fighters. I just don't find it as, like, as time goes on, even though he was good for the organization, there's going to be a point when there's too many champions that come up, and Tim Sylvia won't come up half as much. But that's just me, and that's also from seeing him live at Moosin and it being very upsetting. But do you guys think, though, that Stefan Struve just really, you know, he doesn't use his mass. He doesn't use... Or should I say his height and his reach? And do you think that's something that he can just, like, you know, perfect? Like, who do you go to for that? Is that your coaching? Is that just you? Because it sounds like he gets decent direction when he gets it.
Honestly, the place he needs to go, and it's a long phone call, but he needs to make a call over to Team Golden Glory in Holland and get a hold of Sammy Schilt. Because Sammy Schilt
exactly.
is 6'11", and he is huge.
Yeah.
He should have fed it to me, because then I would have looked smart, because that's what I was going to say.
Oh, well, there you go.
I mean, granted, I'm not a big fan of Sammy Schilt, because, well, granted, I'm not really a big fan of anybody that is that big and fights, you know, at the heavyweight, but Stefan definitely needs to be able to learn how to use that reach. I mean, it should be a problem for anybody to fight him.
I mean, he should be able to keep guys at the end of his jab, at the end of his long, super long leg kicks, and make them work to get in on you. And it's definitely not something he has yet.
No, it's not. I mean, it'd be great to see him throw a side kick. I mean, you know, that would be something right there. He could strike fear in people, but it's just not there. But I do think Rich was right, and he definitely is an interesting prospect. And do you have any more to add on since Ryan already made your ever so smart point?
No, he stole my thunder. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I knew someone was going to bring him up. My bad. Next time, Rich, you'll get the first one off. So
yeah, sure.
When I
have nothing good to say, that's when you'll send it to me. I appreciate that.
You see, it's heard into the format of the show.
I give the new kid some credit.
And I want to get to Silva Sonnen, but first I want to go, this one's going to go to you, Rich. Matt Hughes, slaying Gracie's and the progeny. You know, it's just, and as said, with a move that's not really a BJJ move. It was like a, I guess like a front walk. You know what, I should actually find out exactly what it is. But
it was a Dave Schultz front headlock with a gable grip.
I heard Jeremiah at the gym the other day. He said it was a version of the necktie.
Ah, okay, got it. Because it was great actually, and it looked like, you know, being a wrestler was relying a little more on strength than any one technique. But he has technique. He's Matt Hughes. But Rich, what do you think about the Hughes Gracie feud, and do you think it's finally like, okay, there's no one of any substance left for me to beat in that family or in their camps?
Well, you're in Boston. Let me ask you. Think back 7 years ago, and what did you think of the Yankees Red Sox feud? Oh, wait, there wasn't a feud because it was a one-sided ass whipping for so many years in a row. Well, it's a made-up feud that has never existed. When you fight 50 times as a professional and you're 36 years old, you're going to come across multiple guys out of the same camp. You know, he beat Hoist, you know, in 2000, I think it was 2006, maybe it was 2007.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said it was 2006.
Yeah. Okay. And he's got Henzo, you know, from his most recent fight, and Matt Serra, and he had the Abu Dhabi match in 2000. Against Almeida. But again, when you drive that many miles, you're going to get more, you know, you're going to get more flat tires than anybody else. There's no feud there. I mean, whether he's 5-0 against that group of guys, or 0-5, or 2-3, or, you know, it doesn't matter. There's no feud there. But the thing to take out of it, like I said earlier, is he won the fight by submitting a Gracie guy without using Gracie jiu-jitsu. This has got to be the most demoralizing loss for anybody in the UFC from a personal standpoint, not from a, you know, one shot away from a title or I just lost the belt, whatever. Personally, there's no loss that could ever hurt a fighter as much as Ricardo Almeida losing on Saturday night to Hughes in the manner that he did lose. Hughes probably thought he had an advantage on the feet, and he didn't, because Almeida was doing very well. You know, using his feints and his footwork and his head movement was good. But then he let himself down and took the hook, got in the face lock, and then Matt Hughes, with crushing biceps, got under the jaw and put 150 of his 175 pounds at fight night on the back of Almeida's neck and just crumpled him with an old school catch wrestling move. I mean, Josh Barnett's out there somewhere applauding like crazy. Randy Couture's going, yeah, there you go. And Hoist and Henzo and Horion and the 50,000 other Gracies out there are just sort of sitting, licking their wounds, and hoping that they never cross paths with the guy again.
Yeah, Ryan?
Well, Rich made a very good point about it being a made-up feud. I mean, you don't hear, you know, people coming out and saying, oh, I have a feud with so-and-so from Extreme Couture and their stable of 30-something professional fighters. I mean, and it was totally for the media. It was a lame storyline at best. I mean, if you were to ask Matt Hughes about it, he'd be the first one to tell you that it meant absolutely nothing and he could have cared less. It was just a fight. My biggest problem with Matt Hughes is who Matt Hughes is. He just beat a guy at 170 pounds who was very relevant in what was going on in that division. And you know, the middle of that division, there's been a lot of things moving. And he just came out and said, I'm not doing anything for the rest of the year but going hunting. And my problem with that is that because he just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, Dana White is going to let him do whatever the hell he wants. So he just put on hold a bunch of things that probably should happen over the next 8 months that aren't going to, because he's going to be out in the woods slaying deer. I mean, that's not good for the sport. It's not good for the UFC, and it's certainly not good for the fans who are going to want to see these, you know, probably soon to be pertinent matchups in the 170-pound division.
No, right. I definitely see what you're saying.
I got to hop back in on you, Alvin, and I apologize. I got to completely take you to task on this one, Ryan. I couldn't disagree with you more. First of all, he said he's done for the rest of the year, which means he could be fighting 5 months from now, because that's when 2010 is. Second of all, he didn't take out a top contender. He took out maybe the 20th best welterweight in the UFC in Ricardo Almeida. If he was going to be if he couldn't get through Matt Hughes, he's not a contender, period, plain, dead and simple. Matt Hughes has his last fight before Almeida was Hensel Gracie, not a contender. His last fight before that was Matt Serra. Never going to see a title shot again, despite how much I love the guy. If Matt Serra tells me to jump off the roof of my house, I'm doing it. And Matt Hughes isn't fighting contenders. He's turned down fights against John Fitch. He's told Josh Koscheck to go screw himself. He laughed at the idea of fighting Mike Swick, you know, the three AKA guys. And let's not forget, Swick was considered a top five, top ten welterweight less than a year ago. He doesn't seem to have interest in fighting for the belt anymore, and that's fine. And considering the fact that he's got 30 UFC fights or however many it is under his belt, he can do whatever the hell he wants at this point, as long as he's not screwing up the hierarchy of the division. He didn't just beat Jake Shields. He didn't just win the title from George St. Pierre and then, you know, put the title in a garbage bag like Medusa did in WCW in 1996. He's doing his own thing against people who don't really matter because they interest himself. He's done his bit. He knows he's not beating George St. Pierre, and no matter how much better he gets, he can't teach an old dog new tricks. He's not going to screw the UFC. He's not knocking out their top contenders. He's not taking a fight against John Hathaway and squeaking out a decision, killing another contender. He's not, you know, screwing with multiple weight classes. He is entitled to a fight done.
I agree with you. I realize he's turning down those fights, but you can't say that Ricardo Almeida wasn't one of the guys that were an up-and-comer. I mean, they were definitely banking on him being, you know, the big Cinderella story returning after 3 or 4 years or whatever it was being done. But my problem with that is, why does it make it interesting to watch Matt Hughes if he's only going to fight when Matt Hughes wants to fight? Granted, it was a great submission of this weekend, and, you know, he did something that nobody expected to do with a wrestling move that, you know, probably, you know, 10 million people haven't seen ever, but whatever it may be. Why am I going to be interested to get on a pay-per-view and watch Matt Hughes fight if it doesn't mean anything?
I mean, other than the title fights and the number one contender fights, they're entertainment, and that's what he's doing. He's entertaining people that like to watch him fight. He's not main eventing and making you choose, okay, do I spend $45 to watch Matt Hughes and a bunch of other people? Or now that I've chosen to fight, spend $45, hey, I also get to see Matt Hughes. That's where he is in the hierarchy of the cards, too. And again, Almeida, let's also say two other points here, and then I'll get off of the Hughes topic. Almeida asked Dana for this fight, not the other way around. And Matt Hughes' last fight was in April, which is, you know, was less than 4 months ago, which is a pretty quick turnaround and a really quick turnaround for a 36-year-old guy. And I believe the Serra fight, I don't have it in front of me, but the Serra fight wasn't that big of a layoff, and I might be wrong, from when he beat Serra to when he beat Hensel. I think it was like 6 months. So if he wants to take a few months off to do what he wants to do with his life and heal himself up, his 36-year-old body that's been through 52 professional fights and untold more amateur fights and wrestling, take 6 months off. See you later, big guy.
Well, you know, to that point, because I think he fought Matt Serra. It was either May or July of last year, right? Then
yeah, so maybe
March,
it was a longer turnaround than I thought.
It was closer to a year. But then for the gap, because then I know he fought Henzo in April.
In April.
But when you look
April
at
this
it,
year.
It was April this year, yep. And then he fought 4 months after that. And all I have to say is, you know, while, you know, it might seem upsetting, we got folks like Alistair Overeem who just got back into the ring, and he was the heavyweight champion of an organization. Now, it's not the UFC, and we know the UFC wouldn't have gone for that, but some people don't fight that often. So the fact that he is providing the entertainment aspect, and he is a name that, like, you know, it's not going to get the buys, but it's not going to hinder him, and it might make people feel more comfortable about their purchase, is, you know, is worth a lot. And Matt Hughes is one of those guys where he's afforded the right to go hunting and come back, and he's more of like a special feature at this point than he is anything else. I mean, I wouldn't even call him a gatekeeper.
Right.
I don't think there's a title for him but Matt Hughes.
Right. He's his own class because he's completely unique in his division. If Randy Couture decided he's done fighting for titles, then Couture is the only other comparable. And maybe that's what Couture thinks. Because, I mean, he's fighting James freaking Tony in 2.5 weeks, which certainly isn't going to move him up to the number one contender. Hughes is unique to what he does. Now, I will change my opinion and bow to Ryan McDermott's greatness. If, say, after Shields and Catman, if, say, he fights the winner of that fight, and he beats that winner, and then goes out and says, you know, I really want to fight Henzo again. Yeah, then Ryan, you are 100% right, and we can revisit this conversation a year from now, and I will walk backwards to Boston and bow at your feet. Of course, I'll fly across, but not that long of a
while. While I appreciate that, I don't think you're going to be stepping up to fight anybody that's in contention, like you were saying before. I just did. It's not something that he's interested in. I don't know. It's just, it could probably be a lot of my own personal bias against Matt Hughes, because I've never been a fan of his, and that some of that was definitely peeking through in my little rant on him a moment ago.
Well, yeah, and that can happen because, I mean, he's not everybody's favorite person, period. That's definitely the case with Matt Hughes and a couple of others. And I like the point you made about Randy Couture. There's one other person who I feel like is going to become a little Randy Couture if he doesn't really, really get set tight, and we will have this conversation later, and that is someone I'm a fan of, Uriah Faber. You know, it's like he lost the title, couldn't really get it back, and then he was just saying, yeah, I want to have the most exciting fights for the fans. It reminded me of a speech that I heard Randy Couture give not too long ago. So we might want to watch out for these special people taking the Matt Hughes route, if that's where they go. But now, want to move on to the main event. Now, I enjoyed every minute of this, and I'll be clear. I'm an Anderson Silva fan. You know, love the guy, hate the guy, don't like his last performance. Hey, you know what? He was breakdancing. Can't say he wasn't. But this most recent one, I thought was, you know, him getting dominated. There was nothing to say about it. But the whole time I was thinking, is this black belt going to come in handy? Let it come in handy. I'd love to see it come in handy. And, you know, there was a roundtable discussion on the site about, you know, do we think that Chael Sonnen's trash talk made us more for him or more against him? And personally, it didn't affect me either way, because once it got to a whole new level of crazy, like past WWE crazy, past, you know, Ron Artest crazy, that's probably the craziest athlete I can think of at the moment. I was like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I want to see this fight happen. And then to see him doing what he did, I didn't think he was backing up the trash talk. He was just being Chael Sonnen. He was going to be a hard ass. He was going to implement what he thought he had to. But then he didn't push it too far past, I'm going to work hard. You know, where was the intent to finish? There were a couple of possible submission attempts, and I guess a submission attempt is that, but, you know, it wasn't too hard for Anderson to kind of shrug it off. And then to see that triangle go up, I was extremely happy. And I like it when, you know, God forbid we have a fight where it doesn't go the winner's way the whole time. You know, that's what the sport's about to me sometimes, sports in general. It's certain sports, specifically in a fight, you can win at any time. It doesn't matter what happened up until that moment you win. But I'm going to go to Rich on this one. What did you think when you saw that triangle go up and look like it was on for real?
that was not the first triangle that Silva threw either. He tried to throw them, and Chael was working on his triangle defense. You know, maybe not with the greatest BJJ guys, because Team Quest doesn't, you know, have high level BJJ guys like most of the other high level camps do. But I mean, there were a couple times when Anderson threw his feet up and Chael immediately pulled out of it, and then, you know, or would roll out of it and wind right back up in the guard. But the fifth round, if you watch the fourth and you watch the fifth rounds, and that's all you got to watch, as long as you realize the fourth round is similar to the first three, Chael was different in the fifth round. I don't know if it was mental. I don't know if he got tired. I don't know if Anderson Silva was doing things differently in the fifth than he was doing in the first through fourth. I would hope so, considering how bad he was getting dominated in the first four rounds. But Chael was not as active. He didn't throw as many strikes. He was, half the time when he was on his knees, he wasn't even in the guard as much as he was just outside of the guard. And then he's posturing up, and with about 2 minutes, 20 seconds left, Anderson Silva clocks him right on the open cut with his right hand on the Chael's left eyebrow. And Chael was upright at that time, on his knees upright, fell forward and put his hand on the cut, and he fell forward. And then it was like he was completely stunned. I don't know if it was the pain or fatigue or what it was, but he didn't move from that position. And he gave the triangle, seemingly. I'm not saying Silva didn't earn it, so I don't think that's what I'm saying out of it. But he was unable to perform like he was before, and he gave the triangle the same way Lesnar gave the heel hook to Mir in their first fight. And, yeah, to use a pro wrestling term, I completely marked out. Our whole room was on our feet screaming at the TV, couldn't believe that that it happened. And I'm only able to analyze it like this after having watched it seven or eight times, you know, the entire fight. To say that Chael was different in the fifth round than he was in the first through fourth, and that short right hand that Anderson Silva threw from his back was the key moment of that fight.
It was definitely, there was power there. There was some, or he said he hit him in the right spot. And, you know, some people chalked the loss up at that point to laziness. And, you know, he was different that round. It just was the way it was. Ryan, what do you think? Do you think it was more he was done, he put too much in, or do you think it might have been something that Silva did?
Well, I'm going to get a little dramatic on you. Back in 2003, Aaron Boone hit a monster shot off Tim Wakefield in the bottom of the 11th inning the top of the 11th inning to beat the Red Sox in the Game 7 of the ALCS. And I now know what Red Sox fans must feel like, because I wanted Anderson Silva to lose so freaking bad, it was painful to watch the end of that. I vowed two title fight defenses ago by Silva that I would never buy a pay-per-view of his again. And the only reason I bought this one was because of the supporting cast on the card. But I think Rich made the point of this entire discussion. Chael gave it away. It's not that Anderson won. Chael gave it away. He had 1 minute and 50 seconds left till he was wearing 12 pounds of gold or brass, or whatever the hell it is, and he got lazy, not in the guard, sitting on his heels, sitting straight up, falling into that triangle. He handed it to him. And whether it was fatigue or laziness or a flat-out brain fart, he gave away the belt that night. And
I think it's unfair to use the word laziness.
Well, yeah, I think maybe it is. Maybe you're right. Well, call it some certain amount of fatigue. Exactly sure, but something happened to him in that fifth round, whether it was the wall or, you know, something else was hurt or that cut was really bothering him. Very rarely do you see guys react to getting hit into a cut like that. I mean, you see some pretty wicked gashes and foreheads, and guys are getting beamed in that same spot, and there is no specific reaction to the cut itself. But Chael gave it away. He had a championship in his pocket, and he gave it away.
Now,
the other thing that was remarkable to me was that Matt Lindland, in between every round, was consistently the same guy that he always is, and he didn't change his tone. But what for the 30 seconds of that minute between the fourth and the fifth round, when the cameras are on him, he was completely different. Like he was trying to psych Matt Lynn, or like he was trying to psych Chael Sonnen back into it. And I don't know if it was a mental thing because Chael has lost so many fights that he should have won. You know, he's been submitted 8 times now, most of them on his, you know, while he was on top to a guy on the bottom. I don't know if it was a mental thing. I don't know if Lindlin sensed something. I don't know if it was because he knew that the cut was bothering Chael. But Lindlin saw something before everybody else, and he was fired up and completely different between rounds. Like, he knew that bad things were coming.
Well, I wish he would share it with us, whatever it is.
Leads me to think if he needs to see the same sports psychologist, not to bring him up again, that Ron Artest saw, because it's like he gets close, but he can't visualize the win. I really do wonder what's up with that. But when you say that, you know, it's not, Ryan said it's not that Anderson won it, Chael gave it away, that makes me wonder, you know, I mean, if he had won, I guess I couldn't say this, but what kind of champion would he be? You know, it tends to be, you know, Chael Sonnen's now a case where he's got a lot more fans and a lot more respect, and he could go, he could say anything he wants about anyone, literally, and he just has to be worried more about probably being put on a no-fly list than anything else. Everyone can get behind him. But a lot of champions, and I'm going to say, you know, I guess GSP, some will debate, but are a little more exciting and a little more impressive generally. That's just what a lot of fans want. And I guess people would have got behind, you know, Chael Sonnen to me is like the working man's fighter. He's a guy who's willing to grind it out. It's almost like he's always running for office every time he talks and fights. He works harder than everyone. But at some point, you have to be better than some of the people, not just work harder, because then it's hard to sustain that. And it becomes impossible after a while, because between training and taxing fights and always being the guy working harder, there's a point where talent can only get you but so far. And if your work isn't progressing you, if your work isn't evolving you, then, you know, you got to figure something out. And I mean, maybe
he's always working on the same things. He's always working on the exact same things because he's a Team Quest, and every Team Quest fighter is identical in style to every other Team Quest fighter.
Exactly. And I think there might need to be if not a camp change, but a camp adjustment, or he needs to go to a stay away camp, sleep over, check out what's going on someplace else, anywhere. I mean, say hi to Greg Jackson for a week. That might do him some good, because you can't, to me, you know, and like I said, I actually like Chael Sonnen. He's not bad at all. But you can't, to me, say, I'm going to work hard and nothing new comes out of it. You know, it just doesn't work like that. You're working on the wrong things. And someone that's as astute as him should realize this. And so I wonder if the block comes in, is he learning more and he's just not able to put it to use, or is he just not getting it? I mean, Ryan, you're a fighter. You know that when you get a chance to even go to a workshop with somebody that has skills you don't have, you at least take away some percentage of that and start to build it into your own toolbox, correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're 100% correct. And, Rich, you're also 100% correct. All the Team Quest guys fight exactly the same. And it's, you know, it shouldn't be our job to make that known. I mean, it's kind of obvious when it becomes common knowledge that everybody in the same camp has the same style and you're not progressing or breaking out and learning new things, then you know, what are you going to do in a title fight you got coming up? Oh, well, there you go. You lost it with, you know, a minute 50 left. Job well done.
And the thing is, it's for some, it may need to be pointed out because, you know, you don't hear the conversation that much, but I'm eager to see who he fights again, who Chael Sonnen fights next. Guess it won't be Anderson Silva anytime soon. He's out until, I guess, February or March, reportedly.
Well, I can tell you who it's going to be. It's going to be Vitor.
Oh, Vitor for the then to see who really gets a title shot, and that way,
yeah.
Actually, didn't
I, mean,
I think
not...
you put that.
It's not announced or anything, but that's the only thing that makes sense. Okami wouldn't be the guy because Sonnen already handed him his. And unless
mm-hmm.
Vitor has a clause in his contract that says one win and title shot, and we'll know soon, because if Vitor, who says he's ready in November, doesn't come back until, you know, February or March when Anderson returns, then that's the only fight that makes sense to book is Vitor versus Chael. Winner gets Anderson Silva, because you can sell either guy. You can really sell Chael. The only way that doesn't happen is if they decide to hold Chael out until Silva's back and do the immediate rematch. Either way is fine. Any other decision that they make is wrong, period.
Yeah, well, I definitely think that the Chael-Vitor fight is a good idea, because I actually would be pulling for Vitor in that one flat out. Is because that way there'd be some more legitimacy to getting the shot. Because as much as I love Vitor, it's like, you know, win one in championship, that can be a bit questionable, especially when, you know, you haven't been in it all that much for quite some time. But,
the only reason I would cheer for Chael in that fight is simply because, and I said this on the Tuesday night conversation with Jamie and Jonathan Snowden a couple days ago, is that if Vitor loses to Chael and doesn't get a title shot, then maybe, just maybe, we can see Vitor versus Wanderlei Silva. And who wouldn't want to see that?
Now, that right there should happen anyway, just anyway. That is a fight to see. That, oh, wow.
Take that, Sam Kaplan. That's how you book a fight.
And on that note, we're going to close out this edition of Fighters and Writers. Ryan, you have anything else you want to throw on top?
Yeah, I got one thing completely unrelated to UFC 117. This is for all you K1 fans out there. If you have not seen the 63-kilogram Japan final from a few weeks ago versus Yuta Kubo and Katsuya Yamamoto, get on the damn internet and watch it, because it is probably one of the best two or three fights that I've seen in the last 3 years. Easy. Check it out.
Wow. All right. Take Ryan up on
we
that
sign
if you
off,
haven't seen it already.
And before we do sign off, I just wanted to congratulate in advance Ronaldo Jacare Souza for winning the Strikeforce Middleweight Championship. It's fantastic. Great performance. I loved what you did against Kennedy. I don't know what that was, but damn, that was impressive.
Oh, wow. All right. So, I'll congratulate Mo Lawal on, well, maybe I won't. But all right, everybody. That was Fighters and Writers with Alvin Carter, Ryan McDermott, and Rich Hansen. Make sure to check back frequently. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email me at alvincarter3@gmail.com, and I will make sure they're distributed to whomever or all of us. Take care, everyone.